My guest is here, y'all, and I'm ready to have a conversation with the one and only Greg Daniel, director of Radio Golf, now playing at A Noise Within in Pasadena. Mr. Greg Daniel, how are you, my friend?
I'm well. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I am doing absolutely fantastic. Fantastic. Thanks for taking a few moments to be with us.
Oh, listen, thanks for being so enthusiastic about the production. You told me right after you saw it, that very evening post-show, you told me how much you enjoyed it and if I would come on your show. And I really appreciate that kind of support and enthusiasm. So shout out to you for being an advocate of the production and, more importantly, of the work of August Wilson.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was just sharing that I love his work because he reminds us to do relationships, right? He puts
absolutely
his characters in each other's faces and spaces in such a powerful way. But before we get into him, into his plays, I want to start here. This is the backstory. So for members of my audience who are just meeting you today, can you give us the backstory on how you became an actor?
Sure. I'm a New York boy, born and bred. Brooklyn, yeah, Bed-Stuy. I remember being young, going to a play. It was sort of a comedy, a period piece, restoration comedy, Molière or something. But I remember looking at those actors on a stage, seeing the costumes, hearing the strange language, the lights, the set, and I was just gobsmacked. I just thought that was the most noblest thing you could possibly do, telling the story, holding all these people whom I didn't know in the theater, just spellbound. And I thought, there's something about that. I mean, my world was turned upside down after I saw this production. Of course, after that, I saw many productions, but there was this kernel in me, there was this essence that was struck as a result of seeing actors on a stage communicating with each other and with an audience, that I just knew that's what I had to do. That was my calling. I guess I found my calling. It was I connected with it and connected with it strongly and never varied. I have to say, I never varied for it after that. That was, I was determined to be a performer no matter what.
Wow. Wow. I love it. I love so many things that you just said. You know, you said you went to a play. So that speaks to exposure, right? Exposure is everything. And sometimes we never know what exposure will actually give to us. And it gave you your calling.
Oh, listen, I'm an adjunct professor at USC's the School of Dramatic Arts, and I tell my students all the time, if you're not out looking at people who are doing what you want to do, these are people who profess they want to be professional actors, then something's wrong. You've got to be in there, you've got to go, and drink in all with this beautiful metropolitan city, whether it's New York, Chicago, L.A., drink in everything it has to offer, the cultural life, go to museums, go to features, go to drink in it, particularly if you want to be an artist. If you're talking about being a performing artist, then you need to be taking in all the stimulus that any city, any major metropolitan city and small town might offer you. So, yeah, one of my big prescriptions for wanting to become an actor is, are you living? I mean, how are you living? Are you taking in everything your town has to offer in terms of culture, in terms of the arts, in terms of entertainment? You need to be going. You need to be going to all these events.
Wow. Speaking of taking it all in and drinking in all of the stimuli, you have done big screen since recognizing that this is your calling. You've done big screen, small screen, and stage. I'm told acting on screen is different than acting on stage. Which place have you learned the most about yourself? Meaning, which has brought out the best version of you as an actor?
Scared of, quite frankly. Any role that I'm a little scared of doing because it's not in my bailiwick, I don't know how I'm going to access that, what do I do? Those are usually the ones where I don't bring any kind of preconceived notion to the character because I think I don't know how to do this. So I'm really sort of available and open to it. That I find in terms of doing tricks, because there are things I know I do well that I can put into any character. But if I want to avoid tricks and really get to the essence and really take some risks, any role that sort of scares me is, I just did a Hamlet a few months ago with the Antaeus Classical Company here in Los Angeles, and I was playing Claudius, the one who murders his brother, as well as the ghost of the father who was murdered, and it was just, oh boy, I was classically trained, but I hadn't done Shakespeare in a while, so I was directing, so I thought, oh, okay, I'll take this on. I was scared to death. Everyone in the company was so sharp and just right on target. I'm like, oh no, I don't, oh God, I'm just going to bomb, I'm going to... No, but what it did it got me immersed into the world again. It got me working again. And by the way, it was one of the best experiences I had all year round of playing those roles. But again, you have to take a risk.
Yes.
So if anything's too easily accessed, then I think you're just going from a tepid kind of middle ground. Mm-hmm. But when you really think that this could, I could fail. I could just really, you know, just crash and burn. Of course you won't. You get in there, you start looking at the text, you rehearse with the actors, you work with the director. But anything that makes me awestruck, oh my God, how am I going to do this? Usually elicits the best work in me.
Yes, and I could not agree more. You know, one of the things, the ways I live my life is every year I have to do something that scares the hell out of me. Every year, that is my gift to Mache, to do something that scares the hell out of me, because I don't want to live so comfortably that I don't access the bigger versions of myself and more of the world. So I have such a great appreciation for what you just shared. And I hope that as our listeners hear you, that take risk part is there. What do you say to yourself to get through the moments when you are most fearful? Yes, you said, you know, ultimately it's going to be okay, but do you have a mantra or something that you are saying to yourself to get you through risky moments?
Well, you know, I've been doing it for so long now that I know. I have a track record. You think, Greg, you'll be fine. You never crashed and burned before. You never, you know, some were better than others. But, you know, so experience helps. Experience tells you that, okay, this is a signal. This is what you do all the time. But just put your nose down and get to work. Get to the work. You'll be fine. Just sort of tell myself, you'll be fine. You know, you came here for a reason. You've been brought this far for a reason. Mm-hmm. And you're just not going to get left. So just stay the course. Do the work you need to do. Do it double if you need to do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've had enough successes in my life to know that when I go into those kind of situations that I'm intimidated, a little gun-shy, a little afraid, that if I just steel myself and, okay, hunker down, let's get this, let's do this, and boy, the appreciation afterwards is amazing.
Yeah.
By the time opening comes around or I see the feature or the television show, I go, wow, what was I thinking? What was I thinking? Did I really think? I go, wow, because I see some genuine work there, some genuine risk that I was taking, and I overcame it. I mean, even in my students, I see how much they want to get it and want to climb mountaintops, and they want to be challenged. And there's nothing like putting yourself out there and then getting on the other side to see that I made it. And of course, that will inform the next time you do something like that, and the next time. And when we say take risks, we're not talking about being reckless.
Right.
No, don't put yourself in danger. That's a whole other different conversation. No,
yes.
Not putting in. I'm saying take risk personally, emotionally, because you said you want to be an actor.
Right.
And I tell my class that. Look, you said you didn't have to do that. You could have been a carpenter. You could have been a crane worker. You said you wanted to act. Okay, well, this is what it takes. So you're going to have to learn to take a risk. But you'll build up a track record and muscles that'll tell you, even though I am scared, I will get through this because I've gotten through the other. So rely on your experience, rely on your craft, and rely on your technique.
Amen. And there is something to be said about the fact that I've come to believe that God has so much more confidence in me than I often have in myself. And he puts me in these situations where I have to show up. I'm compelled to show up. And it's like, Mache, you may not think you have it, but clearly God knows that he's put something in you that he's trying to bring to the surface. So avail yourself to this moment, be present, and have a good time. That's, you know, that's always an approach for me that feels really, really good and steady. That said, I know what we receive from you, Greg Daniels, as we watch you perform and become the best of who you want to be. But what is the gift that acting and directing keeps giving to you that it makes you keep coming back?
It confirms my humanity. It teaches me about humanity. It teaches me that we all are flawed in some ways or other, and that, you know, we're all trying to, the human condition is one that's beautiful and painful and glorious and terrifying. I mean, it just affirms that we're all here. I mean, we're lucky to all be here. Day to day is a risk. A day to day is a victory. But it just affirms for me that we all share the human condition, and that my humanity is larger than I think it is, and far more generous than I think it is. And whether it's acting in a film or television or a stage in particular, it teaches me about my own humanity. It reminds me of my humanity and why. And it's funny because you were talking earlier about God knows it. I always go by this. We come this far by faith. I've always thought of, well, Greg, if you're here, it must mean you've come this far by faith. Yes. I don't think you're going to get dropped now. I don't think whoever you profess to be your God or your religious belief is going to just leave you deserted and isolated now. But humanity is a thing. I learned so much about my humanity and how much more generous I can be as a person when I'm accessing and storytelling. When I'm storytelling about other people in other worlds, as August Wilson. I mean, look what August Wilson did, 10 plays
yes,
about
yes.
black people in
yes.
every century of the, every decade of the 20th century.
That's right.
I mean, what a gift in terms, and every play affirms our humanity.
Amen.
Every play
Amen.
Tells us how we overcame, how we continue to move forward, how we treat each other. It's just, I can't think of a more beautiful gift than being constantly reminded of my humanity, of my generosity, how I can be more generous and I can learn more about the human condition.
Amen. And I just finished talking about that in my opening as we were preparing to wait for you. So I thank you for just putting a finer point on that. When we come forward, more of our conversation with Greg Daniels. He is the director of Radio Golf, now playing at A Noise Within in Pasadena. This is KBLA Talk 1580.
You're listening to the all-new weekend lineup of enlightening, encouraging, and empowering talk shows.
Exclusively on KBLA Talk 1580.
We've got a lot to talk about.
I am Michelle Duffy. My guest is Greg Daniels. Today we're talking about August Wilson's plays. We're talking about relationships. We're talking about humanity. We're talking about Radio Golf, the August Wilson play that Daniels is directing at A Noise Within right now up until Sunday, November the 13th. And let me first say congratulations to Rose from Ladera Heights. She is the winner of the ticket to see Radio Golf Friday,
Yay.
November 11th.
Yes. Congrats.
Exactly. We are so excited to be able to bless
That's
someone.
Great.
Listen, I saw it and I wanted everybody to see it. I wish I could buy a whole lot of tickets because it was really, really great. And as I said earlier, it was delicious. As you said a moment ago, Greg, August Wilson left us with 10 plays before he transitioned. What endears you? I know the humanity piece is there, but what also endears you so much to his work?
Well, you know, he writes so eloquently of black people. I mean,
yeah.
The way he elevates and honors and but those who seem to be low on the lower socioeconomic spectrum, and I haven't seen a playwright that honors and loves and reveres and lifts up those people, the ones that seem crazy and out of it, the ones who are struggling for free. He just endows them all with a kind of respect and humanity so lovingly. He writes of every character in his plays, the way he treats them. Not that there are other black playwrights who do an amazing job of portraying African-American BIPOC characters, but something about Wilson, what he gives these people who are really not of a higher socioeconomic ladder. In fact, we're still dealing with every ill you can think of, every bias, every discrimination and discriminatory practice, but he endows them all with such dignity, such respect. He uplifts them in a way that I'm always stunned. I'll hear a speech being done, and by the end of it, I'm like, wow, that came out of that. And very often, the words of wisdom comes out to the people who seem most on the fringe, like in Radio Golf, and I want to give it away, Elder Barlow. You know, you'll hear him saying things.
Woo.
That you know, he seems to be a little okay, a little on the fringe, but what he says,
I tell you, this is live radio, right? So you get these kind of things to happen, but stay with us. I'm so excited to be in conversation with Greg Daniel, our guest. Thank you so much for being here with both of us. Greg?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
Uh-huh.
I'm here. So that's the way he uplifts. Just the way he uplifts us in, as a race, as an ethnicity, for me is very, very special. And again, the audacious attempt to do 10 plays about black people in every decade of the 20th century. I just think the scope of that, the audaciousness of saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to create these 10 plays, is just, I don't know if it's ever been rivaled. A playwright, black, any playwright of a person to have taken on that and to do it quite as meaningful. What's great about Radio Golf, very few people know it. It's not done a lot.
Right.
So one of the great gifts of doing it here in Southern California, I feel like I'm introducing people who already love Wilson, already love The Piano Lesson and Joe Turner and Jitney and Fences, to introduce them to another work of this man's who they may not be familiar with. So many folks have come up and said, you know, I don't know that one, or I've never seen that one, or what is that one all about? So there's even in reviews, there's a whole cadre of people who are just learning about radio golf, and I'm really proud about that.
Amen. Now, I've heard that, you know, in my studying about August Wilson and learning more about him, that, you know, he's often said as a creative and a writer that he loves words. He gives us a lot of dialogue. Is there anything about his work that challenges you as you're giving it off to your cast and you're doing what you need to do to bring it to us?
Sure, be sensitive to the poetry. He was a poet before he was actually a playwright. So in a lot of his speeches, you're going to hear the poetry. So you have to be able to service the poetry, but also keep the meaning of what's being said. If you've just heard poetry, you can read that. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing special or unique about sitting down reading good poetry. But if it's in a character's mouth and they want something, they're going after an objective or goal, how do you combine the two? So I'm always looking to make sure we're paying attention to the music, the musicality of the work and the poetry, but we're also keeping the intent of whatever that character is going after and wants. So combining the two takes some skill. It really does take some skill. It's like doing Shakespeare. Some of the passages are beautiful and poetic. However, you don't want to hear just the poetry. What's the point? What are they trying to get to? So I always find that's a tricky, and that's why you have to cast really well. I have to have actors capable of combining that poetry with the meaning of and the goal of whatever the character is saying. But it's like a musical score. You got to be able to read it. You got to be able to play it.
Yeah.
You got to be able to do it, or else it just falls flat. And you can hear when it's working, and you can hear, literally you can hear when it's working, you can hear when it falls flat.
Speaking of casting, thank you for that segue. What becomes, you know, particularly for the person listening who's interested in becoming a stage play actor, what are you most looking for as in addition to passion and the ability, as you said, to bring what August Wilson gave us, doing service to the poetry, to the stage? What else is Greg Daniels looking for when he's looking to cast?
You know, I have to spend 4 weeks with these people, 4 weeks in rehearsal and then another week of tech, of teching. I have to make sure that they have enough range, that if we start from the first week, second, third, fourth, that they're going to bring something, that their performance is going to grow in a way that I've seen the seeds of it when they auditioned. I saw something there, and I put them through their paces in terms of, but I want to make sure that they're not only talented, also nice people to get along with. I mean, 5 weeks is a short period of time, and we've got a lot to cover. So I have to make sure they're on board in such a way where it's not a personal agenda that's playing out, that they are as available to discover what this play is about as I am. So I'm looking for compatibility. I'm looking for versatility. I'm looking for range, that by the time we go from week one and finally get into the theater and begin teching this show, I've seen a performance that really has grown from A through Z. That's really important to me, because theater is just hard to do. You know, 5 weeks, you only get Mondays off. You know? It's hard, so you really want to spend it with people who are not only talented, but people who also, I have a company of actors right now, I've never seen people get along so well. They bring in food during rehearsals, that the rehearsal table was always filled with food, treats that people were bringing in, and the way they look at each other and watch each other when they're not even in the scene, but the way you can see in their eyes that their eyes are saying, you go ahead, yeah, wow, make that leap. Yeah, we're here to catch you. You go ahead. You can take that leap. You can take that leap. We're all here behind you. We're all here to catch you. You can just see the support that they have for each other, and I love that.
And
that's really
unstoppable. And we can feel it, Greg. We can feel it in the audience. Like, you get to see it, but we also get to feel it and see it and experience it as well as those looking on. I'm wondering, do you feel August Wilson when you're feeding his vision to the cast?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I've read so much about him and his, I always try and honor what the playwrights wish. First, I try to understand what they are. And then I try to, and how am I interpreting this for, I mean, we chose radio golf for a reason. It's 1997. You know, blacks have gained a foothold. in the socioeconomic ladder. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about people from Joe Turner's time or even Jitney's time, but people who have means. There are a few people in these display, as you know, who are Cornell, Ivy League educated.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're talking about a different socioeconomic group here, unlike some of the other plays. We're not looking for people who are trying to find agency. These people have agency.
Oh, God, yeah.
But what have they forgotten? What might they have lost along the way to gain that social mobility? What might have they forgotten? So I'm always looking to see what was August trying to say? What was the essence of the theme here? What's the lesson here? What did he want us to understand? And if I can just tune into that, that helps me tremendously, because he knew what he was doing. I mean, this is a play, two-time Pulitzer Prize winner, drama, New York drama critics. I mean, yeah, I think he knows what he's doing. So it's just for me.
I have a question for you. When we come forward, I have a question for you. Do you believe that there's a trade-off? You said something really powerful a moment ago, that these people in the play have agency, but is there something they've lost along the way? And I'm wondering, Greg, is there a trade-off that we do when we're seeking agency and the cost to get that? This is Mache Duffy. My guest is Greg Daniels. You're listening to KBLA. This is Mache Duffy. This is, in fact, KBLA Talk 1580. Greg, I asked a question. You had mentioned agency, right? You mentioned agency and the climb we do to get there. And I asked the question, is there a price we pay? Is there something we sacrifice in the accomplishment of that? What's your thought?
There can be, yeah. Assimilation, I think it's called. Everything in my mind is called assimilation, that somehow in order to gain agency or to gain a leg up, that we have become less than who we are, that it's not enough just to be an African-American, that I need to, the way I speak, the way I sound, the way I dress, the way where I live, the car I drive, you know, how far do I need to go to make sure that they know I'm okay and worthy of being part of them? When you do that, you've already kind of admitted that you're inferior. You know, in your mind, you've kind of said, well, I need to do more. I am not enough. Mm-hmm. So assimilation is a bitch. You know, you may not mean to do, but you really have to, what values do you negotiate values? What are your values? What are the things you believe that you're not willing to compromise about? How far do you want to compromise? Mm-hmm. Obviously, one of the characters wants to compromise any and everything he can in Radio Girl to gain power. One clearly wants to.
Right.
He wants to give away the family farm because he wants power. And he doesn't think as an African-American male he has to show certain things. He has to do things to signal. Another character is wrestling with, well, how far do I go to gain agency and power? And it's an interesting question. Most, I think, BIPOC, minority, women, et cetera, LGBTQ+, you're always faced with, well, I don't want to be the other, so what do I need to negotiate in order to be part of the group? But what do I lose if I compromise on those things? If I negotiate on those things, what do I lose? What am I giving away in order to become part of the group?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a very thorny question. That's a really, like in corporate culture, if you're a black woman, male, or whatever. So what do you have to do?
Mm-hmm.
Talk this, to sound like that, get an Ivy League education. What does it cost you? And I think that's for any socially mobile person of color, gender, sexuality, the question is, well, if I want a seat at the table, what do I have to do? What do I have to give up? What do I have to compromise? And sometimes it might be too much.
Mm-hmm.
It just may be too much. Is it worth the ride? Is it worth the seat at the table? You know, who else is at the table? Do you want to be with them?
Right,
Other than power and prestige, do you want to be at that table? So those are wonderful questions that I think August also is dealing with in Radio Golf.
And then it becomes a matter of, if it's not about being at that table, it's a matter of either finding the right table and or building your own, right?
That
building your
is,
own.
You hit it.
Yeah.
You hit it. That's empowerment. Now, that's empowerment. That's the true nature of empowerment, creating your own, being at the exactly. That's not thinking I need to fit in to be at their table, but I want to create a table.
Mm-hmm.
I want to create a more equal table. And that's something that I think you hit it on the head. So again, people are torn. Some feel like, no, I just need to do this, and I have a direct path to get there. And some other people feel, well, no, I don't want to negotiate that. It's harder to create your own, but in the end, what's going to give you the most satisfaction? What will you feel value? Where will you feel most valued?
Amen.
At their table or at the table you created and invited the folks that you want to treat far more equally, who also are marginalized at the table.
Yeah,
August is something.
Indeed he is. And when we come forward in my remaining moments with you, Greg, I want to know, what did this production, we've talking about agency and what it requires of us, what did this production require of you as a director that the other two productions may not have? This is KBLA Talk 1580.
Stay tuned for more of The Backstory. The backstory. With Mashay Duffy on KBLA Talk 1580.
And that is us back here with you. Greg, my question was, what has this production required of you that the other two didn't?
I guess because we're working with people of a social record, a different class of people than I tend to get, that he wrote in his plays. This was different. This was special because it's more contemporary. It's 1997. In some ways, I'm a product of an educated class of people. So it sort of reached in to say, well, this is, I can identify more with these characters in terms of my background, in terms of particularly the Ivy League educated one, because I'm a child of the civil rights movement, so I was able to get an education and get and move up the ladder a little bit. So what are my responsibilities? What am I, you know, so I'm sort of holding a mirror to myself as well, in terms of well, what are my value systems? What do I value? What have I done or had to do, and how do I feel about it? So in some ways, it turned a mirror on myself as well. And one thing I want to say before we can do anything else, I am still on board with your commercial about voting. We got a big one coming up this week. We got a big one coming up, and empowerment for me. I mean, when I think of all of those who went ahead and shed their blood and lost their lives to give us the power and to give us the ability to give us a choice to vote, please don't throw up your arms and walk away and say, well, you know, they're all alike. Not that we will, but realize how important and necessary the vote is coming up this Tuesday. Yeah. Please get out there, mail it in, do whatever you have to do, but make sure your voice is heard and vote. So I just wanted to digress a bit.
No, thank you for that, because we need that, because here's the thing. Some people may be discouraged, right? Some people may be discouraged
by
all of the rhetoric and all of the noise.
That's right.
And may just feel like their vote does not count. And so, you know, KBLA in particular has been doing a series of conversations to really inspire people to think about the agency that we have, what we want, reimagining the world that we want, and the participation that we must put into creating that world. So you're right. We cannot stand on the sidelines, no matter how frustrated we are, because think about where we would be had our ancestors thrown up their hands and said, you know what? I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. This is just too much, right?
So, and to be clear, you know, if you're not part of the solution, then you are part of the problem.
You're
not part of the solution in terms of paying it forward or doing something to initiate change, then what are you doing? You know, then you're part of the problem. So I just wanted to just give you guys a shout out and backhand you to say thank you for emphasizing the importance of the vote this coming Tuesday.
Indeed. You mentioned a moment ago, Greg, that one of the things you like about August Wilson plays is that, you know, there's this opportunity to do service to the poetry that he gives us, right, in his writing.
Yes.
And in Gem of the Ocean, right, there was a line in that play that said, life has a lot of comeback in it. I cannot tell you how much, I can't remember the character's name right now, but that line blessed me so much that when I am having a moment, when life feels heavy and hard, or I have something before me that feels like I'm not going to get to the other side of it, I'm like, Mashay, stop it. Life got a lot of comeback in it, girl. And I can't tell you the number of people I have told that you will be okay because life has a lot of comeback in it.
Oh, that's so great
to hear. That said, I'm wondering, what line from all the three plays or from the total of the 10 plays that August Wilson has done that kind of resonates with you and guides you? Is there
I got to tell you, there's so many.
I imagine there's so many.
There's so many. I think one I tend to remember most of is something about time don't wait for nobody. It's something about that line that reminds me we have, you know, we don't have an infinite amount of time here or on this earth, and that do something with the time that before you know it, something, you know, you'll go from what, infancy to being adults to being an older individual,
yes,
being a senior citizen.
Yes.
Finally, that what are you going to do with your time? And I remember so many characters in their own Wilsonian way saying, time don't wait for nobody. No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. So get yourself activated. Get yourself committed to something. It feels like if you want some movement, it's not tomorrow. It's not. It's now.
Yeah.
Time don't wait for nobody.
Not at all. It does not. But I will tell you this. I'm grateful that time created the opportunity for me to be in conversation with you. Thank you
so much
for the work that you do, for the gift of your gift, and for this production. I can't wait to see it again. Thank you so much,
good.
Greg Daniel.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being on your show. Thanks for putting I really appreciate it.
All right. Take good care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Yes, that was my wonderful guest. Again, Greg Daniel, director of August Wilson's Radio Golf, which, again, is now playing through November the 13th at A Noise Within in Pasadena. I am honored to share that I'll be co-moderating a post-show conversation with the cast this coming Friday, November the 11th. If you can, join us at Noise Within. You can get your tickets at anoisewithin.org. That's anoisewithin.org. Again, congratulations to Rose from Ladera Heights who won a ticket today. Next week, right here at this same time, this same station, this same hour, tune in where two of the cast members of Radio Golf will join me here on The Backstory. Again, you've been listening to The Backstory with Mishe Duffy.